And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Oh, howdy, chowhounds. I see you've shown up for the dinner party. I'm calling it a culinary tour of Nicolas Cage. All right, we're going to start you right away with, here, a little hit of LSD in honor of 2018's Mandy. Yes. Oh, don't be alarmed by that. That's just a doll replica of you. It's the theme of the party. Everybody's getting one. Yes, they'll be very valuable collector's items. Anyway, let's take a little spin through the menu. For appetizers, I've got a whole jar full of spiders from 1989's Vampire's Kiss. Yum, 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 yum. And then, our first course. A lovely spiral ham and pineapple, inspired by 2021's Pig. And for the main course, well, yes, it does have something to do with this model train set up here, yes, but not actually the train. For the main course, we're going to sit down and we're going to chew on all the scenery. It will be delightful. And then, for dessert, there's that beautiful three-tiered birthday cake inspired by tonight's feature, Long Legs, from 2024 by Nepo Necromancer Osgood Perkins. All right, if you'll take a seat, we shall begin the meal.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I am one of your hosts, Jason Jackanay, and I'm joined by Two True Freaks OG, Chris Honeywell.
Dad, that creepy guy is here again.
That giggle you heard is none other than the hair metal hero, Chris Tyler.
Well, you're dirty and sweet, clad in black. Don't look back, and I love you. Dirty, sweet, oh yeah.
See Rex.
Pretty much.
And of course, it wouldn't be a vault episode without my brother Luke Giaconetti.
That does sound like a good idea, but no.
mine was there's no S, it's singular. Which he's talking about the Book of Revelation, not Revelations.
My alternate was, are you coming to my birthday?
I'll tell you my alternate. Hail Satan.
And if you can't tell what we're talking about, then fuck you. No. We are talking about the movie that
every
is...
Every time.
That's what I think. So we are talking about the brand new release, which is, it's new. It's new for us, I guess. But it's Long Legs, the new Nicolas Cage movie, where he is a woman-ish.
No, he's not.
Well, he's like, more like Tiny Tim.
Yeah, it's Tiny.
He's just a big fan of 70s glam rock.
My God. But the thing is, so honestly, for the the trailers don't show you any of this, but the first time you see what Nicolas Cage looks like, you're like, wait, is that's like the ugliest woman ever, right? Kind of thing. He looks like the
ugliest.
Apparently,
he was channeling his mother. His mother was a little loopy, and
you think Nick Cage?
Yeah.
Okay, so. Well, look, my first note relating to Nicolas Cage is that he looks like he's wandered into this from a different movie, is really yes. what it is, right?
Yeah, thank God. It's fantastic.
And that, yeah, that's not a complaint, but it's like we've got this very kind of realistic, procedural, gritty sort of film, and then in walks Looney Tunes, right? And just kind of and it's like, okay, were you shooting on the other set? You know, did you get lost on the way back from craft services?
But we've talked about this. When you hire Nick Cage, you're hiring him to Nick Cage it up.
That's
You're hiring him to wander in from craft services.
Okay.
They just put a pail over his head and then hit it with a sledgehammer and throw him in craft services and see what walks onto set.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm all there for it.
Oh my God.
But like you said, it is this grim, gritty, procedural, kind of. And it's clearly taking place in the 90s. But you have to infer that yourself.
The big smiling picture of Bill Clinton on the wall. Yes. It's like they're either big fans or it's not.
On rewatching the X-Files,
My first note of it is with the opening scene with like the red... the red screen and then in the aspect ratio and it was looking very 70s, and then like there were a bunch of stewardesses coming into some place and they were all dressed as 70s stewardesses, and I'm like, okay, we're taking, you know, you see his station wagon and I'm like, all right, we're in the 70s. And then all of a sudden Bill Clinton's there and I'm like, maybe Bill Clinton's governor right now? And then they started talking. I'm like, okay, it's the 90s, but just sort of like coded in the 70s.
Yeah, they definitely want the paranoid thriller feel for this, and it is a paranoid thriller.
And they were sort of in the sticks too, which was, the sticks are always 20 years behind, so in the 90s, the sticks were still in the 70s.
But, I will say, by the same token, in general, the 90s were kind of in love with the 70s also.
Yes,
I mean,
that's when they're coming back.
Yeah, the 90s brought grief back. They brought, you know, disco back. They brought, Saturday Night Fever back. So, yeah, so it's all kind of that, of course, the irony being that, you know.
That
the
mush.
Well, the 70s were in love with the 50s, right? Which is why we had fucking Grease in the first place. But that's
and happy
here.
Days.
Yeah. And Phantom of the Paradise, but I digress. The idea, but I think it serves it, right? Because it's clearly, the story takes place over a very long period, but it's also so discernibly, it's so indiscernibly fluid that it kind of sets you a little bit at, you know, odd end. It's like, okay, well, this could be the 70s, this could be the 90s, this could also be now, right?
Yeah.
It's nothing that's disqualifying it from being now for really for what happened. So it's I don't know. I guess it kind of, because the story takes that long game approach because of how long the events have been going on. I think it's purposefully trying to be ambiguous, right?
Yeah.
In its setting. And you're right. Being out in the sticks. As soon as you have a character say, "My beloved Mariners," it's like, okay, we're in Weirdsville now. A Mariners fan? I've never met a Mariners fan. I've traveled all over this great country on highways and byways and never once met someone who liked the Seattle Mariners.
And they're too depressed in Seattle to like anything.
Well,
I mean, fans of Ichiro, fans of Ken Griffey Jr., sure, absolutely. But no, not... You know.
Granted, she was under a satanic spell of some sort.
Yeah, can we talk about this? This movie takes like 3 hard left turns.
Yeah.
Like the first hard left turn is, oh crap, here's a creepy Nick Cage and you don't get to see his face yet. And then the next one is, oh crap, she might have psychic abilities. And then the next one is, oh crap, fucking Satanism.
and they followed through with the Satanism. And me, as not a religious person, I love a good satanic movie, but there's very few of them. And to get Late Night with the Devil. And this that just embrace the whole like,
the
Satan is functioning and doing his dirty deeds. I think this the Satan in Long Legs was even more Satan-y than the Satan in Late Night with the Devil.
Well, because he was super low-key.
Yes. Yeah, he was Palpatining it all the way through this. And, you know, I mean, the script is not the greatest. And, like, there's just, like, a lot of sloppy police procedure.
Sloppy
and just
dialogue,
like,
and it's very... It's arch in some ways, but it's also just super.
Sorry,
Luke just posted text in the chat. Somehow Satan returned. Hey, it's enough to hang a movie on.
They'll never see him coming. They'll never see it coming. That's right.
It's like, and this is like, there's a lot of fever dream in this, but at the same time, it's fever dream in the way where it's pulling you along. Like, it has agency. Now, that being said, it takes its time. And I was mentioning in our group chat, like, it's shot like a fucking dream. Everything's in a proscenium. Like, you can see everything.
I love, like, that style so much that it did not even feel like people like this movie is. I listened to another review where the guy said, this was the most boring thing I've ever seen. And I'm like, I was sucked along.
Me too.
Every second. Yeah. And it's lead and mean. It comes in under, it's not
97 minutes before the credits.
Yeah. Right.
For a modern movie, that is sprinting. Yeah. And it's like, I will say that this movie does take the tact, which is very common and has been for the last 25 years or so, that it doesn't explain a goddamn thing until the last reel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. That this is not a complaint.
No, because you're in the dark the same way Lee is.
Exactly. Yeah. We have very little more depth of knowledge than she does, right? And I like that. And so it brings that revelation. Even my note, and we're going full spoilers here, okay? When he says, ask your mommy. I'm like, what the fuck? How did we get to back to her mom? I'm like, I'm like, I missed something. And it's like, no, you didn't. You didn't miss anything because Lee doesn't know it yet either.
So the thing is this. Because I watched this, I've watched this twice now. So we watched it the first time when I first got it, I watched it. And then I watched it a second time preparing for this. And knowing the ending, when you watch this the second time, it's like, holy fuck, it's all there. It's all in front of you, but you don't know to look for it because there's no reason.
When she's looking at the locked door, the first time I watched it, I'm like, that can't just be a throwaway thing. I'm like,
yeah.
And I think in about three quarters of the way
comes
through,
out from under it.
I was like, I think I know what this is, but I'm just going to, I was right.
And there's her partner. Whenever anybody mentions birthdays or little kids, his partner's just like, he zones out and is like, let's not talk about that. And that's before we know that he knows that his daughter has the birthday on the magic day. And there's all these little lines and clues all the way through it that, like, you know, of what's coming, you know, and it's not like super obscure, but it's just enough to where, like, towards the end, you're a lot of and the little girl going, are you going to be at my birthday? And she's like, yes, I will. You know, and you're like, oh, what a sweet moment with the autistic lady and the little girl. And then
scene, the first time you see that scene, and then, like, obviously when you watch it the second time, the first thing you see, you're like, this seems off, like off than just the fact that she's on the spectrum. And the little girl might so be. You can't 100% tell if there's something wrong with her too, or what. The thing is, obviously, not knowing what was going to happen exactly at the end, you're like, So because when they pull in, obviously he's out drinking with Harker, with Lee, and then they get back, and it's like, okay, like, is he abusive? Is this like a situation where, like, there's something else going on, like, you know, family things to whatever, but you don't know, and you're like,
yeah. And see, I read that as just he's a cop. When he comes home, he's not
and
a
he's
cop.
He's late again. Yeah, and the whole thing where he's like, you gotta come in. You're coming in to meet my wife and daughter, and she's like, realizes, oh, he's not asking, and she's just like, do I have to? And he's like, yes.
Yeah, but that's I'm like, that feeling of like he's telling her what to do. You're like, okay, like, is this somebody who has to be in control of every situation? Is he aiding the killer? Like, because the problem is the movie starts at the very beginning after we have the part with the little girl. We get to like the quote unquote modern day in the 90s. It feels a lot like Silence of the Lambs, which is what I compared this to. And clearly the actress who plays Lee is channeling her inner Jodie Foster when she's breathing. Yeah. Like everything, I'm like, oh, lady, you calm it down. You're gonna pass out for real. So, but like it's you start to feel like that. So you start thinking like, well, in Silence of the Lambs, you know, there's two killers, and your mind starts trying to, your mind tries to start connecting dots for you that are not there.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's where the left turns come in, because it's like this is not going to be anything like Silence of the Lambs.
Well, that's the whole thing, is what your mind's trying to fill in. Okay, this is going to be like this. It's going to be a serial killer, and this guy's going to be this, and this she's going to be this. Like your mind's trying to make those jumps for you to make it all make sense, because because most people don't like being in the dark about things. They want to kind of figure it out because it's a mystery, right? And I can see where people, because if people have said, and I've read the same stuff, it was so boring, nothing happened, and I'm like, that's because you're not paying attention. Right. Like you cannot play on your phone or read or do something. I can't grade and watch this. I had to sit down and watch this. Like, you have to sit and actually engage the movie and watch what's happening. You can't kind of half-ass watch it.
No.
This isn't like watching Deadpool and Wolverine, where you kind of, okay, I know what's happening. Oh, there's crazy shit. Oh, they're saying fuck 119 times, right? Whatever it might be. Like, you have to engage in this. This is a movie you got to pay attention. And that's one of the things with this, because this is Neon put this out. Neon and A24 has now become kind of synonymous with this as well. Obviously, they were the first ones. People always talk about, like, you know, well, you know, if you find it boring, it's because you don't understand that. Sometimes movies can be boring,
and you can understand because, them,
and you understand exactly what's happening, but they're just boring. This one, if you're not paying attention, you miss stuff, and you don't understand that, like, why is this happening? Oh, this is stupid, because you miss stuff. It's not like there's a whole lot, they're not explaining anything to you. Like, when she's in the room and they're just saying the first word that comes to your mind, like, it's weird. Like, why is she saying those words? Like, what are those? Like, those pictures mean absolutely nothing. And then they're like, well, you beat the number generator machine, like, you know, 8 times. She goes, well, I missed it 8 times. It's like, what? Like, how could you even know how to do that? Well, you're like, well, now your brain's like, she's got to be a psychic. She's got to be, you know, kind of thing. Because there's no way you're guessing 8 times. There's no, you know, kind of thing. Even if you understood how the algorithm works and whatever. But that's all it is with her. She's not truly psychic there. She sees patterns, and there's clear patterns there. And when you know to look for them after, you're like, oh, shit, how'd I miss this? Well, yeah, of course you missed it, because it's not in English. He's not writing it in words that you can understand. It's not like you're like in Seven when it's all written out, whatever, although, you know, kind of takes a little from there, too. But
yeah.
And then, of course, and we talk about the idea that, like, and, you know, like Chris said, it takes all these turns, and then it's like Satanism. You're like, okay, like at that point, I was going to buy that.
Even beyond like the Satanism and stuff, there's other things like the introduction of the dolls.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
we're tapping into
a now we're in a giallo.
Even we're not only in a giallo, we're also in a whole other subgenre of killer doll movies, right?
Yes.
Because everything from, you know, fucking Dolls to Child's Play to Dolly Dearest and everything in between, right? And then, you know, there's you know, the Osgood Perkins, right? Who is he's the writer and the director, Anthony Hopkins' son, right?
Oh. And he's in Magic.
Yeah. Right. And so reading here, inspiration for the evil dolls came from the killing of JonBenet Ramsey.
Yeah. Ooh.
So yeah. That's already, you know, so again, the quote here is the murder took place approaching Christmas, and one present that the parents had gotten for JonBenet was a life-size replica doll of herself wearing one of her pageant dresses. It was in a cardboard box in the basement 15 feet from where she was killed. And there was something so insane about that, I'd cataloged it away. Okay, so the, you know, again, just, I mean, I'm old enough to remember all that friggin' sanity, right? So again, it's all that stuff. You introduce the idea of a doll that looks just like the daughter, and it's like, okay, that's fucked up. As someone that has two daughters, that's really fucked up, and it's weirding me out, right? Even without knowing the context of it. So it's already putting you, Chris, you just mentioned a giallo. We talked about this years and years ago with Deep Red, where there's no scenes of relief, where every scene in Deep Red gets you more antagonized, right? Because even like the dogs fighting or the girl killing a lizard, right, in Deep Red, there's no comic relief to kind of release the tension that movie gets going. There's no comic relief in this movie.
Yeah, this is not a popcorn horror movie or thriller. This is,
It kind of crushes along here. And I mean, that, like I said, but so it even inside the big tent of Satanism, it does different and unique things, right? It's not aping The Omen. It's not aping even like Late Night with the Devil or something like that. Yeah. It's taken in a different approach, right?
Yeah. I mean, the killer dolls don't even kill anybody.
Yeah.
Right. They're just there.
Well, they're the end of
the kid. Yeah.
To get the,
like the medium.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have the metal ball inside of it, and even the examiner's like, I could have swear it was saying my ex-wife's name, and you're like, yeah. What? And he's like, well, there's nothing inside of it. We don't have to cut it open. We don't have to destroy. Like, the guy gets so, it's like he's becoming obsessed with this ball, but it's like,
well, and then
what?
There's a weird scene where he's like, it's like giving off this radio wave type of thing, you know, and stuff, and it's, you know, and in the end you're just like, oh, you know, there was some satanic spell that had to do with the ball, but you know, that's all you need to know. If you know you're Satan, if you know you're Satan, you know okay, it's you know, because you're thinking it's going to be like Silence of the Lambs and there'll be an explanation for for everything. And there'll be some sort of, you know, seven like mess or saw like, you know, that Nicolas Cage was, Longlegs was some sort of saw like mastermind who would, you know, set up some situation where the father would kill his family for some reason or something. And it's like, what could it be? What Hannibal Lecter thing got whispered in his ear or something. It's like, oh, okay, it's magic. Yeah. It's the supernatural. Okay.
See, I really thought it was going to be like one of those, like some of the new slang words or something. He's going to just keep introducing the kids to these slang words, and the dads are like, fuck this, enough of this shit, and just kill them all and kill themselves. It's like, I'm not dealing with this shit no more, and I'm sure as fuck not cleaning this up. You know?
I'm going to. I'm gonna skibbity toilet my whole family.
Well, I mean, it's a great hook, though. I mean,
we've all been there. Don't lie.
No, I mean,
you dads out there, don't fucking lie. You've all been there.
But no, I mean, in terms of there was no forced entry, and there was nobody else in the house.
Right.
So how the fuck do you explain it?
Yeah. Right. Well, isn't that always the thing, though, too? And that's the Carpenter always talks about this. There are two evils in the world. And when in the tribes, they would sit around the campfire and they talk about the evil out there, and we keep ourselves safe by being together as a tribe, and we keep the evil out there. But he goes, the real horror is the evil in here. And he said, that's when he says, when I made the thing, that's what the thing.
I was just gonna say, that's the thing.
But that's what he always said. He goes, the evil out there is the boogeyman. It's the stuff that's the evil that's outside of us. Right. And we as a community can keep ourselves safe and come together, which is what we see happening, obviously, in some of his movies. But he goes with Carpenter, you know, I mean, and again, remember, the thing was panned when it first came out, but then it's now become, obviously, you know, a fucking cult, huge success. Right. The whole idea is that the evil within you is what is much scarier than the evil out there. Because whatever's out there, I can, you know, even if it has no name, no face, it's still out there. It's not me.
Existential, yeah.
Right. And as soon as it's me, as soon as it's my, it's the evil that's inside of me, and or something that I do, or something that I can't stop, that becomes hard because you're fighting yourself. And I think, honestly, those people who piss and moan about elevated horror and all this stuff and whatever, I think this is what a little movie that none of us liked was trying to do, Hereditary.
Yes, yes.
Was trying to do that. And the problem is, the Ari, whatever the fuck his name is, the guy who can't make movies, those movies kind of suck. He should look at this. He should look at what, like, or, like, look at the, what's happening here and how this sets up, and that the evil within, you don't have to be so freaking convoluted and like go all over the place. This movie has turns in it. This movie doesn't explain anything until the end, and you can see how to put these things together in a different way.
This also has characters that you are interested in their survival, yeah, and care about.
Right.
Whereas, and it has a similar gloomy feel all the way through it, uh-huh, but it never has a point where you're like, let's just get this over with and have everybody die, okay? Because I know where it's going. Let's just saw the head off and you know, because let's put this cast literally out of their misery for that movie. But this one, you know, there was the scene where they were in the car, her and her partner, and they were joking about his wife, and he said something like, "That's a slippery slope," and that's what happened. The last half of this movie is a slippery slope where you know it's, yeah, just going, and it's gonna play out whatever's getting played out, but you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And and it's great. It's, you know, like, I don't think this is like people are, this is the scariest movie I ever saw, but
no,
it's not as much that. It's just like this creeping doom through it, and then at the end, it's just like, haha, Satan's made his little evil joke, you know, and it's, you know, and it's just, it's gruesome and moody and just, even if this didn't, because it pretty much, it has, its logic plays out in the end, and the ending makes sense. But like at some point, I was just like, I don't like when the dolls started showing up, when they found the first doll in the barn, I was like, okay, I'm going to watch this like a giallo and not expect this to ever make sense. And I'm going to go on the vibes of it, you know, from now on. And then it ended up actually making a lot, you know, having a lot more coherent storyline to it than a giallo, and a lot more clear ending and, you know, an idea of what happened to make it really creepy, and it's open enough too to make it even creepier. So yeah,
you never actually see Satan or anything. It's just like,
no, he's just there.
He's just around.
Well, you know, it's the eye, the doll.
It's the little mist. It's the, all those little things,
yeah,
that you don't have to overtly see. Well, yeah, okay. So think about, like, let's go old school here. Rosemary's Baby is the devil. I mean, you see the devil's eyes. You see whatever. She's like, yeah, this is really happening, like when she's getting raped and stuff. But, like, you don't – it's not like the devil shows up. There's not a guy with a pitchfork and, like, hooves and shit standing there. Like, you know, it's not like, you know, bam, the devil, you know, kind of thing, right? Like, so – I mean, that'd be funny as fuck. That's
coming 2025.
Bam, the devil.
Lugosi is the devil. Bam, I'm here.
Bam.
Emeril Lugosi is the devil, and then his, you know, his mortal servant is Guy Fieri. We're gonna tell you, we're gonna roll on down to Satan Town. That's where
Oh, that is hell.
Gonna
right
throw
there
a little brimstone on it. Bam.
You gotta get your arms out here. You gotta stick your ass out, and then you're gonna eat their heart right out of their chest.
So. That's so fucked up.
You gotta try some of this heart right now. That is tender. Okay.
But that's cannibalism and frowned upon in most societies. So the thing is, So by not showing you all that, by kind of just having the little things here and there, because my buddy Damien, when I said, hey, did you see Long Legs? He's like, yeah, I had to watch it again. Because his wife had said, hey, but did you see those eyes there? And I'm like, thinking myself going, like, were you watching? Because you see them. It's not like they're like a flash. You know, it's not like the face on the wall in The Exorcist. Like, you got to pay attention for it. Like, they're there. But it's kind of, I think, works better by keeping it, how to say this without making it sound bad. This movie keeps things small when it needs to be. Does that make sense to you guys, what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, yes. You don't need crazy effects and gunfights and whatever. Like, even when the mother blows the partner away with a shotgun blast, we don't have to see it. She's just shooting into the car, and there's blood everywhere. Oh, fuck. Yes. We all know what happened, you know, kind of thing. They keep it small in the way to keep it for at times to make it work better. One, your mind's going to fill in anything far more gruesome than they could put on film. There's just no way. Your mind's going to fill it in, right, to be more harsh and disgusting. And there are other movies that do that stuff better than you can even imagine, and there's no need for it here. There's no need for whatever. I mean, the partner gets killed in the opening, when the first partner gets killed in the beginning, yeah, he knocks on the door. Bam, he's dead. You're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, okay. Really, you're like, me too.
Yeah. Because you're not expecting, I mean, the part with when she's little, that's really strange. And you're like, okay, that's got to come back. Somehow that's got to come back, yeah, right? Because that's not an opening just for nothing. But then to have somebody killed within the first 10 minutes, you're like, okay. And we don't know if that's like is this going to be everyone's getting killed constantly or is it not? Like, how did she know which house? Is she really psychic? Did she just have a feeling? And it's like, but it all makes sense later, obviously, once you now know that her mother is the one that's been, has been used as the henchman. I'm trying to think of a better way to say that than henchman. Yeah, but you know exactly. So I think she's being sent in under the guise of being a nun, and then they want something from the church and whatever. And I'm like, and that's why this movie has to be set in the 90s, or it could have been the 80s or 70s. But I'm saying it has to be set back.
Smartphones and the prevalence of the internet, yes.
Right, because there is no facial recognition, right? Like, you would be easily able to pick somebody up from a Ring camera or this or that. You're captured all day long, and you'd be able to facial recognition and whatever. Plus, if someone knocked on my door and said, you want something from the church, chances are that's, nowadays, we just feel like, most people just
slam the sound of a shotgun cocking.
It's like, you know, but that's the thing is, by keeping it there, by keeping it in the quote unquote a period piece, it makes sense too. But it also, I think purposely, and we said this already, it gives you that kind of Silence of the Lamb vibe. Silence of the Lambs was a product of its time. It was modern day when they were doing it, the early 90s. But, like, it makes it feel like that. And it brings you back to a time when movies were different than they are now. The kind of stuff we get that we could... Remember, this is long before... I mean, by... When did Saw come out? Is it 2000? Right? Or
yeah, Saw came out in... No, Saw came out in, I think, 2002,
2003,
yeah. Four. It was around there because Saw came out. I remember because I was in grad school. I want to say when Saw came out, so that'd be.
So it's
2004. There you go.
2004, because it's the 20th anniversary. Dad and I were supposed to cover it on, and we never did. But that's what I'm saying. So like, but it's long before that. You know, kind of thing. And even looking back at, like, that's when they started really pushing the envelope, what they were giving you. Movies were different. You know, that's why Seven hit so hard when it came out. People were not ready. Yeah. And Seven doesn't show you anything. Doesn't show you anything at all about, like, you know, blood and guts and gore. It's just you see the aftermath of it. And that's what this had, that has that feeling. And I think it's smart on, to do it that way. Instead of making it just another, you know, here's all this blood, here's this killer, here's this, we're showing you the knives, we're showing you the guns, we're showing you, keep it different, keep it weird, keep it kind of like just out of reach for what you can do. So, and then, because then when you tie it together, you're like, well, how did I not see it? And there's no way you sat down the first time watching this, you'd be like, oh, I got this. You don't. Yeah. You keep because there's no way to. So, but anyway.
Unlike Hereditary.
That's
good itself.
I gotta give props to whoever did the makeup for Alicia Witt, because they did a fantastic job of making her look dowdy and older than she is. Because she used to be a fucking smoke show. And I know she is a little bit older, but that was good middle-aged makeup that they did.
Yeah, that was some good Piper Laurie as Carrie's mom, sort of with worse hair.
Yep, and she definitely had
healthier hair.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, very much, it's kind of Piper Laurie, and if you remember the remake of Carrie, where it's Julianna Moore as her, she has a lot of that feel to her too.
Yes.
The gauntness of her eyes and how they're sunken in and stuff. But it really makes you feel that you're like, oh, okay. Like, and it's, you know, I think they purposely, I mean, obviously, you know, the makeup people knew what they were doing, but to get you to feel certain things just from the way someone looks without, you know, bludgeoning you over the head with it, it makes it easier for you to kind of like bring some of those other memories you have and feelings you might have into the mix of what's there, you know. So, anyway, so folks, if you can't tell, we all enjoyed this. It's definitely, I can say this, it is. You and I said it before, you cannot watch this distracted. You gotta pay attention. You gotta pay attention, 100%. And I get it. There are plenty of movies that are made every year. You kind of can watch them and kind of, you know, be a little distracted. It's not a big deal. You follow them. This one, you owe it to yourself. If you're gonna spend the
97 minutes.
Yeah. If you're gonna spend that time, you spend that time and just invest in what you're doing. Because you're going to wind up enjoying, you know, once you kind of understand what's happening, you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, it's going to be like Memento for you. You're going to watch it and then go, shit, I think I need to watch this again and see if I can put these pieces together. Same like with Seven. Like any of those thrillers like that where it's an instant, I need to watch this again. Because how much were they giving me and how much did I miss?
Yeah. And then once you know what to look for, you realize, oh man, how did I miss these things? Like, well, they didn't mean anything at the time.
It's called good filmmaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm always happy when a director like hits a good vibe and is able to maintain it through the whole movie. And this not only maintains it, but builds it from the very beginning to the bitter end of it. And that's a rarity, and it's the kind of thing I like too, and they don't make them like that very often.
And the 70s fingerprints are all over this, because it's an ending. Is it mildly hopeful? Maybe not.
It's not as dark as it could be, maybe. But it could be very dark too, we don't know. But
it's because how do you kill the boogeyman? You can't. How do you kill Satan?
I think Satan. Like my theory at this one is Satan's job was done. I think Satan was just pulling this long prank, where he was like, "I'm gonna get this woman to shoot her mom," and then
I'm gonna make it
very, very amusing for me, and I'm gonna use this Tiny Tim guy and make his life hell, you know, because by the end, it's like, I hope it doesn't happen, but you know, that like the movie was kind of a hit and it was kind of low enough budget that it probably made a lot of money. But like, you know, there's a whole story there of who is Nicolas Cage before Satan got his fingers in him, and how did he get his fingers in him, and all that could be. Another story. I'd rather it be just left up to the imagination myself, but that's what I tell.
That's about the only story you could tell as a sequel to this.
Yes. Yeah.
Is because you're not going to tell the story what happens after.
No.
And we don't need the story we don't need to know about her childhood, because it wasn't.
Just got it.
Yeah, we
know enough about it.
Yeah. Enough are good. I mean, the thing is this, is that Osgood Perkins has only made a couple of films. He's been in a bunch of movies, including Nope, kind of thing, and he was in the movies as a child as well, kind of thing.
He was in some movie where Gary Busey was a dog.
How did I miss that one?
Boy.
So me and Frankie went down to the kennel to try
it. It's one of those things where Gary Busey is a dog that comes back as Gary Busey. So it's Gary Busey pissing on bushes and running around. It's a comedy.
No, it's basically it's Gary.
Yes. Yes.
As an aside, for folks who live outside of the Southeast, okay, you don't have access to the John Boy and Billy Big Show. They have a recurring segment on the John Boy and Billy Big Show called "The Diary of Gary Busey."
Oh God!
Where it's Gary, dear diary, this is Gary Busey, and then he talks about all the stuff that's going on with him in Hollywood and all his friends, and me and Crazy Frankie are heading down, you know, and it's. If you ever get a chance, it's on. You can get the podcast of the Big Show on various podcatchers and stuff. It's fucking hilarious. I love the Diary of Gary Busey. One of my friends is a huge Diary of Gary Busey fan, so that's what I always think of now.
It's gotta be more entertaining than the Diary of Anne Frank.
Yeah, for sure. Probably longer too.
Oh, I thought I was in poor taste with my joke, but you.
Oh no, I'm right behind you playing back up here.
I always like
if you're gonna set it up, I'll knock it down. I'll go down there with you.
You know, I always liked the anecdote, supposedly, that there was this performance of the Diary of Anne Frank where the actress was so bad when the Nazis came in, they said, she's up there!
Yeah.
The audience is all pointing their fingers up in the...
Oh, God. Have we run our course, then, if we're making Diary of Anne Frank jokes?
The only note I wanted to add, just to talk about Nicolas Cage...
We knew this is where this movie was headed.
Oh,
But you know what, though? Here's the thing with Nicolas Cage, right? We've said it a few times that you hire Nicolas Cage to be Nicolas Cage, right? But all of us are old enough to remember when Nicolas Cage was like A-list bankable actor, yeah. Right? And
Raising
and he gets
Arizona,
to the...
Moonstruck.
I like this phase better.
Leaving Las Vegas.
Yeah.
This is my favorite Nicolas Cage phase.
But do you remember there was that period where he was like transitioning into this and he just made a bunch of really shitty mm-hmm. movies where he was
yes.
a star?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. now we've gone it again, you've gone from being, you know, hip to passé, and now he's become kitschd, right? And I love that he has become kitschd because now you can do shit like this, right? You can just be insane, right?
I thought he was genuinely frightening in this.
Yeah, yes. That's what I mean.
He's totally unsettling. I mean, the makeup is doing a lot of work, but I mean, when he's on, like when he's giving
his voice
a shit,
he can
make you feel elated, anxious, terrified, joyful, depending if he wants to go there, he'll get there.
Right. And that's the thing is that Nicolas Cage is a very good actor who just kind of walks to the beat of his own drummer from his professional career and does what he wants to do. And he's great in this. And
he's a pervert actor like Brando. He's done all the normal movies and excelled at them, you know, and he's had his, you know, Raising Arizonas and stuff. And he's just like a pervert now. He needs to stretch and experiment for it to be interesting for it. That's the feeling I get. He wants to get stuck. He'll do some stuff to get enough money to get him to the next one where he can just like go for it and you know, like I'm gonna go into absurdity and then past absurdity into something appropriate for this.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's still
that,
unexpected.
I think that happens with a lot of actors once they start hitting they're not even the third or fourth decade, but like in your second decade, like what kind of ennui hits you? Like, cause you do get typecast, right? And some guys are fearful about, and women are fearful about losing the paycheck. So they'll stay typecast so that they can continue to work, which I'm not bagging on at all. If that's how you're putting food on your table, that's what you do. But I mean, it takes a lot of balls to try to just be like, you know what? Fuck it.
Well,
he's got
Coppola blood in him too, and Coppola makes movies like Nicolas Cage acts.
Yeah,
Megalopolis is a movie that's the movie version of Nick Cage's acting.
Oh, I can't wait to watch
basically.
It.
So, just to bring
the other thing I did want to say, the other thing I did want to say about, you know, his Nicolas Cage in this, he definitely looks like a character that would ride the bus. I think we can all agree on.
he's ridden my bus like, a few times.
Oh boy.
And he would sit next to me too.
It's like and they want to chit chat, right? Okay. It's if you want to see him, if you want to see America, ride a bus, right? That's what they say, right? You'll get all sorts.
You get all the America you could ever stand for the rest of your life.
All the America you'd ever want to smell for the rest of your life.
Oh, I know what I wanted to say about this.
Americans, let's send all the Indians back to Africa. Woo!
I find it very satanically suspicious that in 2024 there are two movies that ended with a song containing the voices of Flo and Eddie, better known as the Turtles. Mark Volman and something, Mark Kalin.
Is there a conspiracy theory here, Chris?
Because the Late Night with the Devil ended with a Flo and Eddie song, and this one ends with a T-Rex song from the album where he hired Flo and Eddie to just do all the who's in it. So there's both movies that ended with Victorious Satan have also had Flo and Eddie, two of the most like weirdo, goofy rock musicians ever.
Oh, and, boy. And it's all coming together.
The two best satanic movies. I'm very suspicious of
Flo. So if there's another one, if another one squeaks in by the end of 2024, will that be the triangle?
Ooh. Maybe they're about trying to get six in 6 years.
About Flo and Eddie.
Oh, Flo.
Because
I'm like, you guys, we got to remember, we also had The First Omen this year, and we had Immaculate this year, both about the birth of the Antichrist.
But no,
there was also no, the prequel to Rosemary's Baby came out too.
Came out this year too.
There was a prequel to that.
Yes, well, that it talks about the apartment. It's on Paramount Plus. It's
basically the remember in if you're familiar with Rosemary's Baby, when she moves in, there was the girl who lived there before who jumped out the window.
Yep.
It's that girl's story.
Yep. Do we really need that?
And
it sets up.
Apparently, we do.
Yeah,
I've heard mixed reviews about it. I heard it's actually visually pretty good, but pointless.
But that's why it's on. That's why I went to Paramount Plus directly and never went to the theater. It's I'm not kidding. It's like the new Salem's Lot. We didn't need a new Salem's Lot. But
that is symptomatic of a larger thing that's going on. The new lot is like post for that.
The thing about
I will say this, the prequel to Rosemary's Baby, okay, regardless of one's argument of do we actually need this, at least that is not a remake, right?
Agreed.
Let alone a remake of an adaptation. Okay. You're remaking Salem's Lot, which in and of itself is an adaptation of a book. Okay, yeah,
which is it's like if you made it twice.
It was Salem's Lot, Return to Salem's Lot, the miniseries, and now this movie. It's like, well, why?
Why?
And I heard the movie was not very inventive or didn't try to like
how are you going to do Salem's Lot in like 2 hours though?
You can't. Right.
I'm telling you. I know we don't cover TV shows on here, but watch Mike Flanagan's Midnight Mass. That is the updated version of Salem's Lot.
I'm writing that down because I've been planning. I've been wanting to do that for years, and I keep forgetting.
You lock yourself in, man. It's fucking fantastic.
Are Flo and Eddie in it?
No.
So what I hear they're gonna do Salem's Lot kind of like Yellowstone. They're gonna do a prequel. It's called Jerusalem's Lot. It's all about the pig. It's of the pig. Yeah, and it's because they got Costner to do it because his visa bill was kind of high, right? Oh, so he's coming in to do it.
Horizon 2, which no one saw Horizon 1, so.
Well, I was going to say,
Costner and her mother watched it.
As I say, with Costner, it's either what? It's either epic Western, baseball movie, or career-ending disaster, right? That's pretty much all he makes anymore, so.
Well, there you go.
His baseball movies are the best ones, though, so.
Yes.
Okay.
Damn good. I mean, I love Open Range, right? Open Range is fantastic.
What's the one where he's the Russian spy?
career-ending
no
disaster.
Out. No way out.
Yeah,
that was
Feb Nikita. That's the one. He's the Russian spy, right?
Yeah, Feb Nikita, the TV show. Yeah, that not the movie. The show that came later.
You're thinking of Silk Stockings, not La Femme Nikita. That's a different show.
La Femme Nikita had a TV show also, which is also on after wrestling when Silk Stockings was no longer on.
You're thinking of Pacific Blue. That's the one you're thinking of with the roller skating cop.
There was bikes. Wasn't it bikes? Yeah, bikes. Now we're talking about shitty USA shows.
Oh, yeah, not sure. It's totally different, which, you know, because you're thinking of Forever Night, which was different then.
The only thing I want to think about right now is Rhonda Shear.
So real quick, let me just bring this here. We talked about it before. The movie with Gary Busey as the dog is called Quigley. It is from 2003. It's
where does that fall in the Quigley series?
Is that Quigley Down Under?
It's Quigley Down Under a bush pissing on it.
I think it's the third one made, but it's the prequel to the first Quigley. But it's you know, running at an hour and a half, and it's rated G, right? But get this, but you go down
for
and
Gary?
I right? Yeah, for Gary. And it says parenthood, sex and nudity, severe. Violence and gore, severe. Profanity, severe. Everything says severe. It's rated G, mind you. It's because they're trying to make sure no one ever watches it. Someone's out there looking out for people. And it's funny because it says...
They're doing the Lord's work on IMDb.
Yeah. It's got Gary Busey on it. It's already guaranteed like
guaranteed
Chernobyl
Gary.
Zone. Yeah, it's...
Yep.
It's Chernobyl. It's Fukushima, man.
It says if you like this movies, other movies you might like. Luke should know some of these titles. To Catch a Yeti. Fun in Balloon Land. Baby Toast. Oh my, okay. So
don't a talking out. Cat.
A talking cat is far too good. Home Alone 4. Like, oh my God. Home Alone, The Holiday, it's even, oh my God.
And guess who's actually in this movie? Which the director one? Of this movie.
Yes, Oz yeah. Perkins. He's second lead.
He's his best friend, yeah.
He's pretty an angel.
Gary Busey is his best friend, actually.
You know what? In this, Booger's in it. Curtis Armstrong. Booger.
I'm no dummy. I've been to this school for 7 years.
and you don't have a doctor, an MD at the end of your name?
A lot of people go to school for 7 years. Yeah, Tommy, they're called doctors.
Yeah. I just thought it was really funny, though, when they said other movies you might enjoy, and it starts listing off the riff tracks of some of the worst. Oh, my God. If you have never seen. Oh, God.
Just taking the word enjoy and just shredding it.
If you can see them all on YouTube, watch the riff tracks trailer for Baby Ghost. I made Kelly watch this, and she goes, "What the fuck
are
you showing?"
That's a horrible idea.
No, it is so fucked up. If there's Baby Ghost, see a talking cat. At least that is better than these other movies. To Catch a Yeti stars Meatloaf. Oh, it is so bad. It's so bad. Oh my God. Anyway, so but that's all that aside. We're very far afield here. Long Legs is nothing like those movies just we're talking about.
But that said, if we could get a movie with Nicolas Cage and Meatloaf, I think that's box office.
Well, that would take a
start
miracle.
Digging. Start digging. Yeah.
It'll all be
in the world of in today's day and age, we can get a holographic
we
Meatloaf.
Can AI him, yeah.
AI Meatloaf,
if
right?
If they holograph Meatloaf, I want classic Bat Out of Hell, swarthy, sweaty, massively overweight Meatloaf.
Yeah, just sweating all over his poor female co-singer as they do Paradise by the Dashboard Light.
That or I want the one from the back of Marvel Comics. That
Meatloaf. Oh, yes.
If anybody wants to watch a horror movie, watch the video for Paradise by the Dashboard Light. You won't be disappointed.
God. So if you want to see this movie, obviously it's available 4K disc, Blu-ray disc is out there. It's not streaming because this is Neon, and Neon does not put a digital code in with any of their stuff. You could purchase it through like iTunes or like Prime Video or whatever, depending on how you get your movies. It's out there other ways as well, but it's available to be seen. It's again well worth your time. You know, if you know, spend time, go there, pay attention, be prepared to kind of feel like maybe you're like, I'm a little lost right now. Just trust me, trust us, you know, stick with it. You got to stick with this thing. And then by the end, you'll be like, oh, okay. And you'll feel like, how did I not see all this coming?
Yep.
But we've already told you what's coming, but I'm saying, but you could see it and it's right there. And that's the best part about it, is that sometimes you watch a movie and the, you know, the twist, it turns, you're like, ah, okay, really? Well, what a twist. Not to ruin it for anybody, but I saw Trap, the new...
Jesus.
M. Night Shyamalan.
Guess what the twist
is. The music video for his daughter.
I know. It's in Atlanta, and it's in a trap house, right? Yeah. And it turns into like a hip hop sort of thing. And Outkast is there, and Ms. Ooh. Jackson is one. It's all Ms. Jackson, and that's you. I'm sorry, Ms. Jackson. Well, tough shit, Ooh. Right?
I wish that was it. the twist, the 100. Is I waiting for the twist to be like because the killer is. They tell you the killer is in the fucking on the poster.
Right in the trailer, yeah.
I'm waiting for it to be like, okay, where's the twist? Okay, the twist is maybe the singer turns out to be a serial killer also. Nope. Maybe the wife. Nope. Maybe the kid. Nope. The twist is there's no twist. You sit there and you're like, wait, where's the twist? Did he forget? Oh, motherfucker forgot the twist. Fucking forgot to put the twist in? Dude, that is your thing. That would be like Uwe Ball making a halfway decent movie. It's this twist. Yeah. He ain't gonna do it. So
Chubby Checker is turning over in his fucking grave right now because
he got his goddamn
twist. And so this are the fat movie. Boys that it did.
Right. There's your movie. Chubby Checker, the zombie of Chubby Checker coming down to fucking kill M. Night Shyamalan.
Chubby Checker, the fat boys, and Meatloaf.
Attacking a diner, right in
the largest zombies ever recorded. Yeah,
yeah, but he's gonna be attacking the diner like in Chud. You have to have Jay Thomas and John Goodman be the two cops there, just like in Chud. So they were the two cops in Chud. Anyway,
they eat the people, and then they're slamming the cheeseburgers and the patty melts and milkshakes. It's beautiful.
Oh God, now I want a patty melt.
Me too. Now I want a hot dog.
Yeah.
That's from Legally Blonde.
I've never seen that, but still, I want a hot dog.
I did the bend and snap today, actually, and my son said to me, it's probably not a good idea to do that at the old age home. The bend and snap will be your back. He said, yeah. Since you're an old man, Dad, I'm like, okay, get the hell out of here.
The bend and snap sounds like when I get up in the middle of the night to go take a piss. Bend, snap, oh, God!
Oh, God.
I do the Peter Griffin. I'm just going to sit here and make dad noises.
So, anyway.
I'm wearing my Isotoner slippers and bathrobe while we're
If they were good enough for Joe Namath, yeah.
Dan Marino.
Dan Marino.
That motherfucker, that's all I got to say.
What did he need gloves for in Florida?
No, he the gloves to all his linemen because they took care of him like he wore kid gloves. That was what they were going with. He's just happy not to wear pantyhose like Joe Namath. So anyway,
or be the Wiz because nobody beats the Wiz.
Nobody. beats a good Wiz.
Does beat a good Wiz.
Okay. Growing up in New York, you had Crazy Eddies and nobody beats the Wiz, and nobody else from anywhere else in the country knew what the fuck you were talking about after
a while. Now that you mention it, aren't they remaking the Wiz? Isn't there a new Wiz coming out? I believe there is.
Might be. That right. I don't know. All I know is you had Crazy Eddie, nobody beats the Wiz, and then you get Tom Carvel here from Carvel Cakes.
Kyle. Those commercials too.
Tom Carvel is from New York, right? And it's like that's local here. So hey,
the best local commercials that Chris ever shared with any of us was the Hammer Shapiro ones.
Those
fucking fantastic.
I'm Jim the Hammer Shapiro.
I'll squeeze them for every last dime.
I squeeze them you for every dollar that hammer. They have. Smash them!
Now that's the other matchup we gotta do. We gotta have a movie with him and MC Hammer.
Yeah.
It's too legit, man.
It would be legit.
I'm not going to lie. The Jesus Christ bail bonds that you share with
Jesus
us all.
Jesus Christ bail bonds.
That has stuck with me for...
God release you on a payment plan through me.
Oh,
you lied to an afraid? Bail out? Bail out?
Bail out?
Oh, boy.
This... So yeah, Long Legs is a movie.
Well, at the end of this, we should be invoking Jesus anyway, so you know, just to be safe.
Yeah, legitimately. This, I mean, again, I had no idea what the hell to expect going into this. The marketing was so wild for this movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had a billboard with just a phone number on it. It's like, okay, 1988. You know,
there's a 976 number.
There's a website like the Blair Witch that has somebody who had compiled like true crime stuff on all the murders and stuff and talks about like they set it up a little bit like that. They had a whole little online thing and they had codes you could break and stuff like that.
So that let me throw this out there. OK, so a lot of times for this. I won't watch these movies with my wife. If it's something that I've seen and I know that, you know, like Shocker, great example. I knew that we could watch Shocker, right. And my wife would be like, okay, this is silly, whatever. But I watched this one on my own because I wasn't sure about it, right? And I'm kind of glad I did because I don't think my wife would like this. But it got me thinking, right? And you mentioning true crime just reminded me of this. One of the most, it seems, popular genres for women now is true crime, yes. Right? And has been for
always,
a while.
It's always so, been since the start. I mean, it was Anne Rule who started it.
So what do you guys think? Do you think this would cross over into being the true crime? Because it is a true crime and it's not though, right? Because it's never
right.
So
well, that's what I'm saying. That might make it all the scarier for the true crime enjoyers because they're like, ooh, getting into it in a true crime way. And then it just ruins that by being supernatural, and that could be creepy, especially if you've got like, you know, a true crime fanatic who's got like Catholic damage, you know, Catholic upbringing or something,
right.
You know, like the Exorcist always hits harder for Catholics too, you know, and so it would probably suck them in, and then they'd be like, let me do my true crime sleuthing skills on this to try to figure out what happens, and they're doomed because they're never going to do it that way.
Yeah, it's definitely a hook.
Yeah. So hey, you know, like I said, it checks a lot of boxes. It covers a lot of ground, like we said, both kind of thematically and then generically as well. Mm-hmm. So I think, like I said, I was impressed with this. Too many times we watch these movies that get a lot of hype, and then they really don't live up to it. Like a lot of our modern movies that we watch, it's the smaller ones that kind of, you know, hit the spot better, you know, whereas this one is a movie that, again, had a huge promotional marketing budget and actually delivered the goods. So I was like, I was just pleased about that.
It delivered the goods but a lot of people really don't like it. And it's like, but I also noticed when I watch a lot of reviews, they go, they never explained this, or I don't know what that was all about. And it was like Jason said, they were looking at their phone at some point. Because I'm like, no, that was spelled right out for you.
I'm sure the people that didn't like this reviewer fucking creamed over Hereditary, though.
Absolutely.
Maybe.
100%.
Maybe. Yeah.
And that's part of that's exactly what Luke's saying. Now, some of these modern movies, these, you know, the elevated horror, all this stuff like that. Like, just because something... you know, I mean, everyone's like, "Oh, if you don't understand it, it's because you're stupid or whatever." I'm like, "Nope." Like I said before, you can make a movie and I can watch it, and it could be boring, and I understand everything you're trying to tell me, but it doesn't mean this has to be well made. The problem is nowadays, all these there's a whole bunch of, no matter what comes out, everyone's like, "It's got to be this is everything's got to be absolutes." You know what I'm saying? Like, is Long Legs? I mean, I'll be honest with you. Some people have said Long Legs is the best movie they saw in 2024. It's not my favorite movie from 2024. It's good. I enjoyed it. It was a good horror movie. It's a good psychological thriller. It's a good, you know, crazy scene. But it's not the best movie I've seen this year. But it's not certainly not gonna like. But it's not like one of those like, oh my God, everything has to be the greatest or the worst. And I think sometimes people get too wrapped up in that too. But be it as it may. You've already heard this year. We, we've talked
this
about
this year has been a good year for movies. Yeah. I've seen a lot of like great cinema movies and stuff like Long Legs. It's just and Late Night with the Devil. It's like just good, solid, moody, you know.
I've actually enjoyed all the movies I actually went to see in the theater this year.
Yeah, me too.
That was what, Dune 2, Planet of the Apes, Furiosa, Wolverine. Yeah.
Well, hey, like, so perfect example of this, like Haley and I went and saw Smile 2 because we went on a Tuesday, and I think Haley and I went because Kelly didn't want to see it. She didn't see Smile 1. And Haley and I both enjoyed Smile 2, right? Very mainstream horror movie kind of thing by way of like what they're putting out there for advertising and money and whatever. But some people were like, oh my God, it was so dumb. I'm like, okay, that's your opinion. But Haley and I both enjoyed it. Is it the best horror movie of the year? Nope. Does it have some creepy shit? Yep. But it doesn't have to change life. Not everything has to be, you know, absolute. No. I mean, Dad and I saw
the formula is right in the same place of Long Legs, where it's really, really good. It's, you know, people are like, this is the wildest, sickest movie ever made, and it's just like, okay, you're showing your hand of how many wild, sick movies you've seen.
Yeah, not many.
That. But it's for what it is, for the audience it's getting, it is a juicy, you know, it's up there with, you know, Cronenberg's The Fly, you know, where the masses get something that's a little juicier and creepier and grosser than they're used to. And they're just like, that was the craziest thing I ever saw. And I'm like, well, it's not the craziest thing I ever saw, but it was good and crazy.
Yeah. And this is gross in the skeevy way, not in the way. Yes. And I think
this
that
is gross in the take a shower to wash the Satan off you at the end of it.
Yeah.
Well, it's
to
it's
try
like
to wash the Satan off you.
I was trying to, I know I met people had said Long Legs was the most this is the most intense horror movie I've ever seen, whatever. I'm like, okay. And I'm waiting for it to be there. And I'm like, it's good, but this is not that. I'm trying, what was it? There was something else this year. I forgot what it was.
Barbarian?
Oh my God. But Barbarian just is weird at some points because you're like, okay, like, what the fuck? Why is this guy giant? Like, I was, you know, kind of thing, like, where did that come from? But like, and why did we do that all with CGI poorly? But like, now what, I'm trying to remember what the other one was. That people are like, this is like the most intense movie I've ever seen. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, it's fine. It's not like, I mean, I can't remember what it was. All I know is I'm sitting down to watch, and when I watched Immaculate, and I was like, and Immaculate's good, and the end has got a fucking punch to it. And I'm like, yep. And I'm like, and that's why you're not a studio movie, because no studio would let you get away with that ending. Because the First Omen has exactly the endings you think it's gonna. I mean, it's kind of like going to whatever, but it's like, yep, that could be a studio ending. That's okay. That's safe enough for a studio. Immaculate's like, nope, not safe enough for a studio to ever put out because they fucking boycott you. And that's why Neon, which is put out Immaculate, Neon put out this. They put out movies that are a little out there. It's A24 puts out movies that are out there. That's why Maxine is not mainstream for everybody. Neither was X, and neither was Pearl. They're not mainstream movies. They're not supposed to be. They're enjoyable. They're weird. They're different. They're not for everyone. It's okay not to be for everyone.
I'm saving those ones. I bet I'm looking forward to watch. Should I watch them in order that they came out?
Yes, you should.
Okay.
Because if you watch them out of order, then you'll know you're not supposed to know. You're supposed to watch everything. Then you watch Pearl and you learn things. And then Maxine takes place, you know, in the 80s. It's after everything. But you should watch them in the order they were. Ty West made them because he made them in that order on purpose. So,
okay.
There we go. So, yeah, if you haven't seen them, got to watch X, then Pearl, then Maxine. That makes sense in that order. And they're pretty good too. And Mia Goth is really good in them. So,
okay.
All right, there we go. So,
yeah. Well, like I said, so you get your setup here. You can watch Long Legs, and then you can watch those, and then you can, you know, just go back through our catalog. You can go
grab your Turtles albums and listen to them backwards,
and then go watch Azrael and expect no one to talk the whole movie because no one talks the whole movie.
You can go back and watch Prince of Darkness, which was the first movie we did on this podcast, which is about Satan without going Satan.
Rewatch Prince of Darkness.
Prince of Darkness. I have to watch the Blu-ray. I got this, the special edition from Scream Factory, all cleaned up with all the features.
Ooh.
It's good.
And nice after you watch that, you can go watch Monster Dog to keep the Alice Cooper thing going.
Yes.
It would have been really cool if at the end of Long Legs that he just had a big glass vial full of black goo in the basement. Would have been really nice.
That would have been fun.
If connecting Long Legs, Prince of Darkness, and Prometheus.
I think it was green goo in Prince of Darkness, though, wasn't it?
Satan in a can. Yeah.
Satan in the can.
Hey, do you have Satan in a can?
You better let him out. No,
Satan
you
in
better
a can
not
is
let
like,
him out.
It's like the red devil canned ham, right? Basically.
Hey, you got Satan in a can? Well, you better bury him under a river.
I better stick him in an insane asylum and then let all the inmates out. I don't know why it was Southern when he said that.
I don't know why it was Don Knotts, but
oh,
yeah, okay.
Is definitely a Southerner.
Watch it through the window. That Don Knotts.
Watch it through the window.
Okay, I got a doll for you.
We're off the rails here.
I got a doll for you.
Now, Andy, we're going to catch this weirdo that's leaving these dolls.
Andy, look what the church dropped off.
What? That looks just like Opie.
Aunt B, come on out. Check this out. There's a sequel right there with CG and Andy Griffith axing the whole family.
Oh, to see Aunt B get fucking eaten in the axe. Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the vault. Oh, fuck, I screwed it up. Hang on 1 second. Sorry, I can hear the TV.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Lee Harker.
It goes on like that for a while.
For how long?
24 minutes.